In the last series of Word of Mouth, we asked you to send us newly minted acronyms, and you obliged with some real peaches. Peaches, which stands, of course, for perfectly elided and cunningly hidden eloquent statements. In this series, we're asking for aphorisms. If you're not sure how to compose an aphorism, help is at hand. I've a guest here who's been collecting them since he was a child. He's the European editor of Time magazine, but he's also the author of a book on aphorisms called We Are What We Think, James Geary. And James, I read in your book that you actually met your wife through an aphorism.
Well, where do I begin? Aphorisms have literally changed my life, and I have an aphorism to thank for actually meeting my wife. And this took place when I was a university student, and I used to do these little performances where I walked around the cafeteria with a globe into which I had poured a collection of aphorisms. And I would go from table to table asking people to pick out an aphorism. And one young lady that I proffered the globe to took an aphorism by W.H. Auden, "Guessing is more fun than knowing." And then I moved on. And the next morning I found a little note in my box saying, "Knowing is more fun than guessing." So I did not know this young lady at the time personally, although I knew her to look at. The next day after I got that message, I saw her in the hallway on her way to class, and I said, "You're right. Knowing is much more fun than guessing." And later that same night, behold, she appeared unannounced in my doorway. And that's not where the story ends, but that's where I'd like to leave it for the moment.
The rest is mystery.
And then she's now my wife.
Wonderful. Now, what's the difference between an aphorism and, let's say, an epigram, a one-liner, or even a proverb? How do you distinguish aphorisms from these other forms?
I thought a lot about that when I was writing the book, and I came up with five laws because that question really bothered me. What makes an aphorism special? There's something emotional that I think makes them special, and that is aphorisms make you want to do something. They're not comforting, cozy, gooey sayings like you would get in a greeting card or a Christmas card or something like that.
Right, so just on the way, give me an aphorism that will make me do something.
Well, I can give you an aphorism that made me do something, and it makes me do something every morning.
Yes.
And it is, "The difference between a rut and a grave is the depth." And I read this aphorism for the first time probably more than 30 years ago in Reader's Digest magazine. And it has stuck with me ever since. And in fact, not only has it stuck with me, but it's lodged inextricably in my brain. And every time I wake up in the morning, when I'm on my way to work, walking to the tube station, this aphorism pops into my head. And I think I'm walking the same path to the tube station every morning. Am I in a rut? If I am, I better get out of it quick, because the only difference between that and a grave is the depth, and I don't want to wear it down any further than it is. So
yes,
it's a sort of a provocative, inspirational saying that makes you question things, that makes you question your assumptions, question what you're doing in your life, and it keeps you on your toes, both mentally and physically.
You also say in your little cluster of laws that, of course, they have to be brief, don't they?
Yes.
Yes, they have to be personal.
Yes.
And there has to be some kind of twist, you say, as well.
That's right. And that's where the linguistic tricks come in, because I think aphorisms have a lot in common with other forms of literature, poetry, for example, but also jokes, because aphorisms have punchlines. There's a moment when you get it. I think one of the greatest examples of the third law of the aphorism, it must have a twist, is Chateaubriand, a French aphorist from the 18th century. And one of my favorites from Chateaubriand is, "Love decreases when it ceases to increase." Now, when I first read this, I thought, what a load of junk that is. It just seemed completely trivial and obvious to me. And my initial interpretation was, well, love becomes less when it becomes less. But what Chateaubriand is actually saying is that if you're not constantly falling in love with your beloved, then you're already starting to fall out of love. And I think that is a very bracing aphorism to keep in mind in any kind of relationship, romantic or otherwise.
I see. And of course, you've also said that aphorisms have to be philosophical, which takes us right the way back to the ancient sages who gave us the form in the first place, didn't they?
Absolutely. People like the Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, they all spoke and taught in aphorisms. In fact, the title of the book, We Are What We Think, is an aphorism from the Buddha.
Who are the aphorists of today? Muhammad Ali, maybe?
Muhammad Ali, definitely. And he's a great example of someone there's a chapter in the book about light verse as aphorisms. Certain kinds of poetry qualify as aphorisms. And Muhammad Ali falls into that category. "Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee." That's why they call me Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great poet, great rapper. And he's a great example of an aphorist who does it off the top of his head. Some aphorists scribble on napkins. Some write 3 pages and then over a period of weeks narrow it down to 1 sentence. Some practice a kind of spontaneous combustion form of composition, and Muhammad Ali was one of those. And I think a lot of pop music, a lot of aphorisms are in pop music. Bob Dylan, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. Bob Dylan, if you go back and listen to his music, the lyrics are just wonderfully aphoristic and very rich in imagery and aphorisms. There's a certain performance artist today, a woman named Jenny Holzer, who got her start in the 1970s by plastering her aphorisms on posters all around New York City. And she's extended this kind of performance art or conceptual art to have her aphorisms scrolling across the news ticker on Times Square and those huge billboards at sports stadiums that show the instant replays and all the statistics. She has her aphorisms projected up there. She's carved them into stones. She's carved them into pavements. She's had them projected onto the sides of mountains through xenon projectors.
The key question, though, is are any of them any good?
Some are good. Here are a few good ones. And they're very contemporary, so they're very much about consumer culture. You are a victim of the rules you live by. Playing it safe can cause a lot of damage in the long run. It's very profound.
Now, you've studied aphorisms, you've anthologized aphorisms. You know what's coming up, don't you?
I can't possibly imagine.
Have you ever made up one?
Yes, I have, and I thought you'd never ask. When I was doing my performance art in college, I wrote a lot of aphorisms, and a few of these are included in the book. I'll just give you a brief selection of some of my favorites. Never trust an animal, no matter how many legs it has. Young people should picnic in active volcanoes. There are certain mistakes we enjoy so much, we are always willing to repeat them.
Oh, yes.
And last but not least, there is not much room for error in an eggshell.